Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to The Crown and Anchor Greyhounds. This is Richmond Till We Die, a conversation about the Apple TV Plus show Ted Lasso, where we explore the characters, their relationships to each other, and how they're able to make us laugh until we can hardly breathe one moment and then feel with the deepest parts of our hearts the next. I'm Brett, and I've been tasked with doing the intro and outro for this episode by myself because apparently I work with two pre-Madonnas. Just kidding. All jokes aside, Marissa, Christian, and I are so excited to present this episode's guest, actor Maximilian Osinski. Y'all know him for his work as Zava on Ted Lasso, the newest and most enigmatic member of our beloved AFC Richmond. Those who aren't familiar with the soccer world may not know that Zava bears a whole lot of resemblance, both physically and in personality, to the iconic and larger-than-life Swedish footballer named Zlatan Ibrahimovic. OG Marvel fans may also recognize Max from his role as Agent Davis in the ABC show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or as Dennis Graham in The Walking Dead World Beyond. Max has also made appearances on the NYC theater scene and has both a writing and producing credit for work that he did on the TV miniseries Hollywood Hitmen, which he also starred in. We've loved the energy, no, the aura that Max has brought to this third season of Ted Lasso, and we're excited that we can all get this chance to get to know him and Zava a little better. So, Greyhounds, please join us as we give a warm welcome to Maximilian Osinski. Thank you for being on the show, Max.
Hello, everyone listening. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. How did you come to be involved with Ted Lasso? And specifically, when you auditioned, did you know you were auditioning for a Zlatan-y character?
Oh, yeah. Well, it kind of all happened, and it was magic in a way, because me and my wife, after the pandemic, we've lived in LA for 10 years plus, and we kind of just wanted to get out after everything started opening up. And so we're like, why don't we just rent our house and go to London for 3 months? And I was like, what? She was like, yeah, let's just, you know, go on an adventure. So I agreed. I said, that sounds great. So we did, and we came out here. We rented the house, and then we came out November 3rd, I remember. And about a month in, I got this self-tape request for the show. And I remember getting the tape, and I was like, there was a breakdown for the role. And it said, you know, one of the top scorers in the world based on several, like, famous soccer players or football players.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I don't play soccer. This must be a soccer. Please send a clip of yourself doing some soccer tricks. I'm an immigrant. I came here when I was eight weeks old from Poland, but I didn't grow up with a football tied to my ankle like a lot of the kids do here.
Right.
That I see in London, man. They look like mini Messis at 4 years old. And so I almost kind of psyched myself out because I thought the role was really fun and I thought I could do it, but the whole soccer thing, because I had seen Christo
right
on the show. And I just want to preface this. Me and my wife were huge fans of the show, like everyone else in the States.
Right.
Like, you know, we loved the show. We felt good watching it. All our friends loved it. So you get the tape and then request and you see that. And I kind of almost psyched myself out because I don't, like, I suck at football. I don't mean to disappoint any of the fans of the show.
What? You're an actor? I'm shocked.
Really? Yeah. And then psyching myself out, you know, I almost turned down the tape. I remember I was like, that day I was going to call my manager, be like, guys, it's Ted Lasso. It's season 3. For this role, they can cast anyone. They could literally, I thought they could literally call any Premier League player and say, do you want to play this role?
Right.
Because who wouldn't want to be on the show by then?
Mm-hmm.
And last minute, my wife was like, just why don't you call our friend, Damian Bode? He's a friend of ours and he lives in Australia. And he's like a super positive guy. He's almost like a Ted Lasso. And I gave him a call and he was like, what? Oh, Max, Ted Lasso. Oh, no, you got to do it. You got to do it. Like, no, just do, like, show them what you got. Don't show them what you don't got. It's probably a terrible Australian accent. I'm so sorry. And he just said, dude, you look the part. You're in shape. You can smash the tape and then just go to the park, take your shirt off, exercise as the character, and maybe do some slow motion kicks. And it's going to look badass. And I took his advice and I said, all right, yeah, all right, I'll try. So I felt better. And I did the actual tape, the sides that came with it. Then me and my wife, in character, we improvised like an interview with Zava.
Yes.
And I spoke a little bit of Polish in there just to, like, you know, show them what I got, basically, you know, highlight what I can do and not what I can't. And then we went to the park and, like, I probably looked like an asshole because I took off my shirt and I started doing crazy stuff. I was doing push-ups in character, and, like, different style soccer or football warm-ups you see the guys do on the field,
yep.
Pull-ups on a tree. I was squatting at this big log, winking to the camera, and then slow motion, like me terribly running up, trying to kick the ball up high and like doing some knee juggling and dribbling and then like a header in slow motion. And we put it to music and I just tried to have joy and fun with the tape, and it was a lot of fun, and the tape was fun to make and it was fun to look at. And then I just sent it off and I said, you know, that's what I got. So
yeah.
That's the guy if I was going to do him. And it took about a month from when I sent the tape to when my reps called and said I got it. And unbeknownst to me, my reps were basically like keeping it really low key that my tape was getting traction and moving up the food chain. And they called me like a week out before the official offer. And they're like, or no, I just think I actually, no, I just like pinged my manager. I was like, hey, did we ever get any feedback about the Lasso thing? Because they were laughing at the table when I sent there. It's like, oh, yeah. It's gone up pretty high. We're just waiting for Jason to approve the tape. And I was like, what?
It's a good bit of first news.
Yeah, I was like, Jason Sudeikis? He's like, yeah. They just sent the tape to him. And I was like, oh, my God, we should know by the end of the week. And that whole week, I was like, is this really possible? I'm like, really? And then we were out to dinner with my wife and the in-laws who were here to visit. I think it was like December 18th. And my agent and manager called and said, you're Zava. And it was very exciting, a bit surreal. The best Christmas gift a guy could ask for.
Yeah.
And I remember my wife teared up a little bit because she loved the show and cried. And I cried a little too hard because I was wondering, did you not believe? But yeah, that's kind of how it came to be, and in the process of me trying to how I taped for and what I brought to the tape and the read. So yeah, it was fantastic news. I'm so lucky. It was like really just stupid luck, you know. And I got hired as a actor from this. Like, they weren't looking for actors in the States. They were looking for like globally, everywhere else but America, apparently. So it was kind of like good.
You
timing.
Just made the cut.
I just made the cut and it worked out. It worked out, which then kept us here till end of July because of the show.
Marissa, of the three of us, has the most illustrious soccer career. I think it peaked. When did it peak, Marissa? Around middle school?
Yeah, that sounds about right, Christian.
Yeah. And since then, you know, now none of the three of us are going to trick anybody into thinking we're professional footballers. But we watch a lot of soccer. And so the minute that we kind of like heard your character being described on screen and then saw you, it was very clear that you were based off of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, inspired by Zlatan Ibrahimovic. How aware were you of him before you auditioned for the role? And then how did you prepare to play him? Because he is very well known, enigmatic, and specific in how people understand him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the breakdown referenced Eric Cantona, referenced Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And they didn't say that he's like a villain. They described him more as like an agitator. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea, coming from the States, who Zlatan Ibrahimovic was. But after getting the part, I just, I watched some interviews and stuff for the audition to get kind of a sense of some of these guys. But once I got the part, I kind of just dove into that world. I read tons of books and bios, watched hours of like documentaries and interviews. I read Zlatan's book, I Am Football.
Right.
Which is amazing he didn't title it Zlatan is Football, but hey, whatever.
Yeah, but I'll be honest with you guys. I fell in love with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Like I really got to know who the guy was, like not just from like the YouTube clips you see, but like hit the book he wrote and then the interviews and hearing other people talk about him. I really admire the guy. And I mean, I think Jason and Brendan said the same thing in an interview, like they're huge fans of his. And I became a huge fan of his. And I kind of learned that these guys, the way they present to the public and press is they're completely different in the locker room and with friends and family. And some of them present in a Zava-esque way. Some of them are a lot more quiet, or you can say humble, like a Messi or, you know, a Zidane. And there's Cantona, too, who was a big kind of, I think, an influence for the writers of the show. So, yeah, it was just a lot of trying to understand why these guys behave the way they do and why they change. And I think you kind of see that in episode 3 a little bit when he finally gets to meet the team and everyone, the charisma. And there is a genuineness when they're talking to you. They are talking to you. They're in the moment. There's no one else of concern. It's like, I'm talking to you. And I remember like the and I kind of compared it to I had a friend who's a costume designer and she worked with Tom Cruise on a movie. And, you know, you're like, oh, it's Tom Cruise. He's coming in. And once you're in the room with him, he's in the room with you. He right. knows your name. He knows what you do. He's interested in what you're doing and he's humble and he wants to work together. And I think I thought that was something interesting to bring to him if I could in helping tell the story, you know, like. At the end of the day, it's their guy, their show, their story. And they, you know, I'm just there to help facilitate the vision they want
right.
for the scene. So I'll do whatever they need with the character. But as an actor, I kind of prepared it like I was playing a biopic.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to go in like doing a bad impression of someone. And I wasn't trying to do an impression of any individual soccer player. I know people are saying there's a lot of similarities. But that wasn't my intention. And the way where I come from, I thought it was interesting if he did sound like you can't figure out where he's from.
Right.
You know, I'm Polish. I didn't want to have a Polish accent. I didn't want to have a Russian accent, Swedish, French. But these guys are international. They've lived everywhere.
Yep.
Like Zlatan's lived everywhere. You know, he has his mom's from one place. His dad's from a completely another place. Grew up here, speaks several languages. I thought it was just interesting if you can't pinpoint where it I don't know where he's from. I can't tell.
Right. Yeah. I think you've mentioned that in some other interviews, like kind of the work you did to sort of add some mystique, even more mystique to the character through a sort of unidentifiable, like he's not clearly Russian or Polish or something like that. He's just kind of vaguely European metropolitan, you know, like it's a brilliant choice, I think. And I think that's one of the reasons that people just have that strong point of reference to a player like Zlatan, because, you know, he kind of carries that same sort of mystique. Like he's an enigma. Like he is what he is. And I think Brendan Hunt sort of succinctly said that when he was like, Zava merely is Zava. Like he has no regard for the small things that a coach might try to do, but he has no disregard. He's just a force unto himself, essentially. You know, and I think that's one of the things you see in episode 3 is that when we very first meet Zava, it's almost like, oh, is this just like a Jamie Tart 1.0 on steroids, like a diva who only cares about himself? And then as you get into episode three, you realize this is a very different thing. Like, they're both hugely talented. And of course, Zava's a little bit of a diva as well. But like you said, the charisma and the way that he attracts people to himself is something that 1.0 Jamie never had. So, you know, what was the process of for you and the writers and the creative team of just like making sure, OK, this is distinct enough, like this is a this is not just a Jamie 1.0 retread?
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, it's two things. I remember Brendan, the first day I kind of really got to, like, even just chat with him about Zava was the day I showed up to film the Veggie Dog Vigilante scene. And he said something to me there that kind of, like, was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. He said, you know, like, he's like Michael Jordan, when he retired from basketball and then went to go play for the White Sox, he was like, he was part of the team. He rode the team bus, but his hotel was different, you know, from the other players. That's right. Like, Jamie's at a different place in his career than Zava. Like Brendan said, Zava's climbed the mountaintop several times, you know.
One trophy. What he's
yeah.
Has a legacy already. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't need to prove himself to anyone anymore. You know, for him, I think he's just looking for a new challenge in his life. And at this point in his career, which I read a lot with a lot of these guys, when they've peaked and they've been at a peak for a long time, like, they kind of, for them, like, family matters at that point a lot. Where can I play that makes my family happy? You know, I've made my money, I've created a name for myself. And sometimes you're like, not to get too like, psychoanalytical, but like, these players, sometimes they're made to can feel like, you know, you played for so long that you end up just being like this piece that people want to trade.
Right.
Be on a team. And, you know, when you're starting out, that's exciting. You want everyone to want you and fight for you. But once you've done everything you've ever dreamt of and you've reached this glorious like pinnacle in your sports career, you know, that game doesn't fill you up with anything. And the stuff that grounds you in life is what really matters. And I kind of like, it kind of helped me like ground the character and his motivation and why he would say this, some of the stuff he would say, why he would behave the way he would behave, why he would jump through different from all these different teams as they describe him. Because for me, it was really like, the role is so funny. Mm-hmm. You read all this stuff and on the surface, you get it. And on the surface, the public, when you hear people like Zlatan and all these other players, Ronaldo, they're switching teams. That's just what the headlines say. So for me as an actor, I was like, all right, that's what I would think too. But like, why? Mm-hmm. Why they act that way? What's something there? What's the little deeper meaning behind why they would do that? You know? So that's kind of how it helped justify and ground the role for myself. And how the audience perceives it and how you guys feel about it, that's entirely true for your experience. And it's none of my like business to tell you how to feel about him, you know. Like, I'm hopefully you're entertained by him, whether you love him or you hate him or you're like, you don't know what you want to think about him. That's true for you. So I try not to judge them, the character, at all. You guys can do that,
and we're still going to get to know him a lot more too,
right? And I think your portrayal is very honest, and you're acting it so well, because he could be just a caricature or this cartoon or just come off as a villain. But yeah, I think as the audience gets to know him, there is something very lovable and endearing and charming about him that isn't just one note of, you know, the diva that's coming in to score all the goals. There, you know, clearly the team has some admiration for him. And I think that goes a long way for the audience too, because it is a show that's so heavily based on this dynamic of the ensemble, right? So coming into this show that was so well gelled, I guess, as an ensemble, was that something you felt like was particularly difficult, or was there someone who kind of made you feel like a literal part of the team right away?
Well, in general, it's always as an actor who comes in to recur, guest star in something, that's one of the hardest jobs to do, because you come in and there's a regular cast that's been on the show, even just one full season, let alone two or three. And with this show specifically, two amazing seasons with, you know, adulation and awards and everything. So it's always a come in. It's like that second, third removed cousin who gets invited to Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. You know, and the room's kind of quiet. But so I've experienced that before. But coming onto this show was nothing like that. Like, I was a little bit like, all right, I wonder what everyone's going to be like. And, you know, they all seem really great on the show, and you hear them on interviews or podcasts. They seem really lovely, but you never know. You never know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I came in and, like, I started going to the costume fittings first, and I started meeting everyone, and, like, all the guys from the team, like Phil and Tahib and Collar and Billy and Christo, they, like, knocked down my dressing room door, introduced themselves, and were, like, so pumped to meet the guy who was going to be playing Zava. And we were all, like, laughing about the clothes. It just felt very welcoming, and, like, there was no egos. There was no, like, well, who's this guy who's playing this guy? You know, the one of the top strikers in the world on the show. Like, who does he think he is? Everyone was as nice as they come off on the show, to the point where I came home. I think I've told this story a few times, where I came home and told my wife, babe, everyone is really nice. I can't be an asshole. That means I'm an asshole. You know? It's like when you're playing poker and you can't find the sucker at the table, that means you're the sucker.
Yeah.
So I couldn't have felt more welcomed and just comfortable. Hannah was wonderful the first time I met her. A funny story, we were filming that Chelsea scene, and we hadn't really chatted or said hi to each other at all, but I had filmed the Zava walking into the stadium with the hands up, and then they were doing the reaction. And then after we wrapped that, we were just in a little video village. And, you know, I just said, hey, I'd like to introduce myself. You know, I had terrific work on the show. We've been fans, and you deserve all the accolades you've gotten. It's a pleasure to work with you. And she was like, oh, darling, at this point, I just come to set and I just hope, please don't fuck it up. You know, there's that pressure, you know, third season now, two seasons of awards and everything. So that no one is resting on their laurels. Mm. You know, they're all working as if this was day one on episode one, season one. Like, everyone wants to do the best they can. That's everyone. Top from Jason all the way down to the PAs grabbing coffee. Like, everyone's just happy to be there and enjoying it.
Walk us through your experience at the premiere a little bit, because you come and you do the blue carpet thing and people are taking your pictures. A lot of the guests and press at that point, you know, probably don't know exactly what your role is going to be or entail. The lights go down. Everybody watches the first two episodes, and they watch it like on a movie screen. And so it's this different experience. And you get to the end of episode two, and you've had at least two, like, really memorable, important scenes. The lights come up, and now, like, everybody recognizes you as, oh, you're that guy. What's going through your head as you're talking to all of these strangers beforehand? And then what's the experience like after everybody gets to see those first two episodes?
Actually, when I did the press line, the actual press got four episodes, I think, the first four. So they already knew who I was playing and that had seen it. So that kind of actually made that whole blue carpet thing way easier.
Yeah.
Instead of just showing up and they're like, why are we taking photos of this guy?
Right.
And do I have to talk to him? So that made it a little bit more relaxing, because everyone's like, oh, hey, you know, you're this, like, tell us about that. And I was just nervous because I had no idea what, like, why they told me, but I was just like, I don't know how much I can talk about. And people are telling you, like, this outlet knows, they've seen the first four episodes. You can talk to them. This one's only seen the first two. Don't mention anything about the three. And there's, but, you know, reporters ask and they dig. So I was just more nervous about not ruining anything. But yeah, when the lights came up, that was fun too, because a lot of the people in the audience maybe didn't really know who I was because they hadn't seen for the episodes. And it seemed like people really enjoyed the first two episodes of the season and the character. And, you know, if you can make a room full of people laugh, you're just like, you can breathe easy a little bit, especially with a role like this. You're like, Jesus, you know, you just hope it doesn't fall flat. But then again, how could it? Like, you work with guys like Jason, Brett, and Brendan. Like, they don't want to let anyone fail, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you just trust them, then, you know, let it happen. So yeah, it was great. It was surreal to be at the premiere, to answer your question quickly. And the blue carpet was a little easier because people had known why I was standing on the blue carpet. But yeah, there's definitely, like, a different effect once it's aired people saw in the after party was nice.
Well, I want to circle back to kind of what Christian mentioned about you have kind of these two major scenes in episode two. And I would say just based on the internet reaction alone, the urinal scene is going to pass into like television lore as like one of the most powerful, like hilarious scenes. And especially like you have Hannah Waddingham, she's just a force, right? And I had read somewhere, I think, that originally there was more dialogue for Zava in that moment. But once y'all filmed it, like the day of filming, maybe someone came, maybe Jason came and said like, hey, actually, like, just don't say anything. She's just going to like kind of steamroll you and then leave. And so what was it like kind of experiencing that? Because that's like sort of Zava's first big moment. And then, you know, your dialogue disappears, but it adds this wonderful bit of mystery. But kind of what was that situation like?
Yeah, no, that's a great story. So Jason came like on paper when I got the script, I read that scene and I was like dying laughing. especially with the pee underneath the scene. And I was just pinching myself. Oh my God, I'm so lucky that I get to work with these guys. They're brilliant. This is hilarious. And the dialogue between them was really funny. And the day we were filming the Chelsea stuff was actually the day before the bathroom scene. So this is a day ahead.
Okay.
We filmed the Chelsea stuff. And then Jason came up to me, and he has that Ted Lasso mustache and stuff. And he's always like, he's very focused as like a creator of the show. And all about the work, which actually put me at ease because you forget who you're talking to and who you're around. It's just like, boom, we jump in the work. But he came up and he was like, hey, man, I was thinking like maybe we keep Zava a bit more of a mystery. And I'm thinking Hannah should just like say this whole thing and you don't say anything. I think this is like day one or day two of me filming because previously I did the Veggie Dog Vigilante thing, which is pretty quick. And in my head, I'm like, oh, Jesus. And, you know, to Jason, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And in my head, I'm like, oh, fuck, they think I suck. We didn't even rehearse it. They haven't given us a shot to, like, say it out loud, you know? And in my head, I'm like, oh, my God, this is awful. Maybe I'm fucking up somehow. But I went home and I looked at they sent the revised stuff and I was like, this is actually better. You know, I think show don't tell is like one of the main things you talk about when you're doing film and TV. And then when we filmed it, it just felt great. Like, why would he say anything? And I think it keeps him really mysterious. He still has his status. Mm-hmm. And Hannah just nailed that speech. And the whole time I was just trying to keep it together. And especially on that asparagus line. Yeah. But when I saw in the theater for the first time is when I saw Ep 2, I was like, that's a brilliant choice. Like, he doesn't need to say anything. Mm-hmm. And it's Hannah's moment. It's like Hannah's time to like, you know, grab him by the balls and like tell him the truth. And, you know, it still works. It still motivates him to go to Richmond. And it still keeps him high status and a bit mysterious because, you know, I got the glasses on and everything. So I thought it was like the best choice because on paper, things are funny.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when you put them in real life and you do them and you see them on screen, like it might not work. And I think that's the brilliance of these guys is Jason, all these guys know that and they keep everything flexible and they leave room the day of filming for some magic and inspiration to happen. So a lot of the stuff you see in the show, which I discovered quickly, like is discovered and played with while you're shooting, sometimes in between takes. And I think that was like something I've never experienced that on a set before, you know, and you can chalk it up to Jason's SNL experience and the writer's room and their experience. But yeah, I thank God they cut my lines. I know that I never think I'd say it out loud, but yeah.
Well, and it takes a cast of people who, you know, are sort of humble enough to serve the content, you know, or to serve the story being told. And that's like, I think that's something that we've talked to a handful of cast and creative folks from the show now. And that seems to be an overarching kind of echoing thing that we hear is like, yes, like those things happen. And in the moment you're kind of like, okay, like hope it works. And then you see the finished product and you're like, yes, like brilliant, because like I assume we are going to sort of find out Zava's motivations, and it's going to be in a way that's way more interesting. But then you just get this, like, you find the second laugh, right? Like, we are laughing at the asparagus line, and then Zava like has this beat and then sniffs, which is like, killed me. I died. So like you get the extra laugh anyway, you know? So good.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. It was, Hannah, I mean, that's all Hannah's work. I just had to stand there and
try not to laugh.
Slowly, try not to laugh. Yeah.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You mentioned costuming earlier. How fun was it to do costuming for Zava? And did you get to have any input into his personal style?
Costuming was a lot of fun. And very luckily, I did get to have a little bit of input into the costuming. Jackie Levy, the costume designer, was fantastic to collaborate with. She asked me, what do you think? Like, here's some options. What are you feeling? Like, we were texting different looks for him, especially in the first step. And a lot was changing. I remember in the original episode two, the way they introduced Zava wasn't the Veggie Dog Vigilante. It was like he was doing like some watch commercial with his shirt unopened and stuff. So we were fitting that. And then next day it changed. And then we suddenly found ourselves looking for something like that made sense for the Veggie Dog Vigilante, pardon me. But like the yellow shoes I'm wearing, the high top shoes, that I brought that idea in because I bought the short top version of those, and I was in Paris and I just thought these kind of work. And I saw the high tops and I was like, Jackie, what do you think of these? But the high tops for Zava, like the kind of flashy, they're very bright. And she brought the idea to the guys and they signed off and they loved it. And then we were trying on these different jackets. I remember I tried on this like really bright colored purple rainbowish fur coat. And I told Jackie, this feels more like Macklemore to me than, you know, and then we found that jacket. And I love the fur collar. I thought of him as like this lion, viewed himself as like a lion among mm-hmm. sheep. And you know, Jackie loved it and she brought it to the guys and they thought it was great. I think I read somewhere that the guys kind of said like, they like to let the actress kind of, their instincts kind of guide where the clothing takes them. And it felt that way to me when I walked on the show and Jackie being kind enough to like want to hear out my ideas was really nice. So it felt really collaborative and like I had a little bit of input as to what Zava might wear when and even how.
I'm looking forward to the drop of the Zava and Zava and Zava and Zava t-shirt. Like, I'm for sure buying one of those when that happens.
And if not, we're buying a Cricut and making our own.
We're going to make our own.
You guys notice those shirts? That's great.
Yes, oh, I loved it.
Yeah,
we had to pause it.
Well, and to your point too about the costuming is, I think I, before season three, this might've been between season one and two or maybe two and three, but I have seen Jackie Levy in an interview say, you know, that they sort of asked some of those initial core group of players to like think about a footballer that inspired them or that they felt some sort of connection to. And then they were able to sort of draw from that. And so, especially these days, there's a wealth of fashion to choose from when it comes to looking at footballers. So
I don't wear Versace shirts and stuff like that. Like, you know, I like black shirts, t-shirt kind of guy. So that was a lot of fun to just, you know, Jackie pulling out, what about this Versace shirt or this, you know, name the designer top and coat. I was like, geez, yeah, sure. Yeah. High fashion. It was nice. It was fun. It's fun. And when you get to play a role like that, you just lean into it and you just try to own it. You know, I always told myself I got to, you know, for this role, like I have to wear the coat. The coat can't wear me, you know? So you don't want to look like an actor in a costume. You want to look like the character. That's the coat he wants to wear and he rocks it, you know?
Right.
Part of the costuming is, you know, the shirt comes off in one of your most iconic bits, and we see the giant tattoo on your back. Brett is dying to know if you know whose idea it was to use Jesus Christ Superstar in that scene.
For the music.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. You know, in a script, usually in this show, they would say, you know, this is happening. And underneath, we have like six different playlists, six different songs they possibly want to use for it. And it was funny. None of the ones I think they use in the montage in 3 was actually in the script. Again, like they'll change it based on like what fits as the show gets formed. I don't know whose idea that was. It wasn't mine.
I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tattoo. Yeah. I remember the tattoo was a big thing because I originally wanted to have some tattoo sleeves here and stuff. And then we would have the tattoo on the back. But I think they like, well, it's two things. It's less time in the chair for me.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have to do the sleeves. And I think they wanted to do that reveal of the tattoo on the back, like make it count.
Right.
Make it once and make it special, which I think then paid off, which was hilarious.
Oh boy, did it.
Yeah. And so we were working on the design of the tattoo, you know, kind of like I was pitching some ideas. And then I think Brendan was working on some ideas, if I'm not mistaken. And then Nikki Austin costume hair and makeup helped execute it. And, you know, I'm glad you guys liked it.
A brilliant reveal.
You mentioned that you speak some Polish. You're also skilled enough in folk dance to have folk danced for Pope John Paul II. How did you get that opportunity?
Why are you bringing that up? Well, first of all, I'm not skilled enough to go dance for Pope John. That came grown up. God, we got to cut the interview short. This is
That's it.
All right. So very quickly, I grew up in Chicago. It was a very heavy Polish neighborhood. My mom, because we immigrated, wanted to make sure that I was in touch with my Polish roots. So I went to Polish school. You know, I did the Polish Boy Scouts. You know, they made me play piano like every Polish kid was being asked to learn. And then when I was in the Boy Scouts, I met a friend and he was like, hey, man, do you want to meet some girls? There's a lot of girls in this Polish folk dance group and we don't have enough, a lot of guys. I think I was like 13, 14. I was like, yeah, let's do it. And before I knew it, I was wearing a folk costume with an ostrich feather sticking out of me and black leather boots to my knees, like dancing away. And this folk group kind of had a bit of like a footprint in Chicago. And I have no idea how they finagled this, but we got to travel to Rome to do like a pilgrimage. Oh, that was Israel. Sorry. We traveled to Israel after that, but we went to Rome and we danced in like this general audience with the Pope. You know, when he does mass and in the Vatican with hundreds, thousands of people. And then the head of the group knew one of the cardinals or bishops, and she requested if we could do a private dance for him in his home in Castel Gandolfo. And like 2 days later, he says, yes, he would love to have you guys over. So like I'm 14 years old, I'm going to the Pope's house. Pope John Paul, you know, is the famous Polish Pope. And we found ourselves, we did two dances for him and he was so funny and he was cracking jokes about Chicago and he shook everyone's hand and we got to meet him and we took photos with him. So it wasn't necessarily like you have to audition for the group. And then the group has to audition. It was, I don't know. It was, I don't know who she knew to ask and how we did it. But I know that we were like the third Polish folk dance group in history to dance for him. And our picture is somewhere in the Vatican Museum. That's like my little, that's my little like, you know, icebreaker when I meet, when I do interviews or meet new people. And they're like, did you folk dance for the Pope? I'm like, yeah.
One of the reasons,
big, just to meet girls. You
know? One of the reasons I asked the question is because Tom Hendrick, who plays O'Brien on Ted Lasso, he is quite the accomplished Polish folk dancer. Yeah, and I saw today on his Instagram, he's at like a UK Polish folk festival and he's like in the outfit and dancing and everything. Did the two of you find occasion to have a dance off at any point between scenes? Is that something he challenged you to?
Yeah, we did. And we pitched it to Jason and he loved it. And we filmed a scene where Zava and his character folk dance off in the locker room. And then they just cut it.
Can't wait till we get that blooper reel.
We did not have a folk dance off. We did hit it off though right away. Like I can, I think he could tell from my last name, Osinski. And he was like, hey, you know, brother, do you speak Polish? And I was like, yeah. And I started speaking Polish and he started speaking Polish and we were just, it was nice. And then, you know, he told me he folk danced and I was like, oh my God, I did that too. You know, I stopped and I stopped when I was 16. But I think you should ask him. He's like the professional folk dancer that he probably shouldn't have been at the Pope's house. not me. But he's terrific. He's a wonderful guy. And yeah, he lives in London, so we keep in touch.
It's interesting how your stories, your introductions to folk dance line up too, because when we talked to him, I think he expressed that his family also wanted him to stay connected to his Polish roots and that he also he was like, it was a great way to meet girls when you were like a teenager. So, you know, that's, you know, there you go. Yeah. Who knew? Yeah, Polish folk dancing.
Who knew? Yeah. I mean, I don't think I got a girlfriend out of it. But
oh, false advertising.
False advertising. Knew that they weren't interested in the guys and, you know, ostrich feather caps. Yeah.
Shocker.
Yeah.
You've mentioned your wife, Deechan, a couple of times, and y'all work together on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and now you're both in Apple TV Plus shows. You're in Ted Lasso, and she is in Severance. Which one of you landed with Apple TV Plus first?
Deechan.
She did.
She got Severance. I think we were still in LA, like just coming out of lockdown. So she got that first, right around when she was still had to film Jurassic World.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was first. And then obviously, yeah, I told you guys, yeah, I didn't get it till a year. I didn't get it until last until a year later.
The two shows are maybe opposite in tone, but one of the things that they both really hinge on are reveals and surprises. And so what's it like to watch your respective shows with each other, knowing that your spouse is going to be surprised by something, a secret that you're holding on to?
I mean, I'm just in gratitude. First of all, like I pinch myself, it's like you're on an amazing Apple show that like people are excited to talk about, and I'm on an amazing Apple show that people are excited to talk about. We just try to remain like grateful and happy, and we pinch ourselves, and it's fantastic. I remember being on set of Ted Lasso when the show premiered, and like Jeremy was walking, did you guys see that show Severance? Like, I really like it. And I was like, Severance, like my wife's on it. And he like, his face lit up like, oh really? Who is she? And I was like, oh, she's like, oh my goodness. I love it so much. And you know, like it was a little bit surreal. We try not to spoil things for each other. I mean, she knew kind of what I was filming for Zava.
Sure.
She was here with me. And like, you know, you come home, like, how was your day? I'm not going to say, can't tell you.
Where'd you get that giant back tattoo?
Tell me everything. And I would say, do you want to know? Or do you want to, it might ruin it for you. But, it still hasn't taken the joy from her, like watching it on like come together. I didn't know how Severance was ending. So when I saw that, it was fantastic. And I was so happy for her. And I'm really excited about season two. I haven't asked about what the scripts are doing. You know, I just kind of know when they call her out when they're filming her. I was like, how's your day? I was like, oh, we have to shoot this thing or something. I was like, okay. But I kind of just want to, I want to be surprised, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. No spoilers here, but that reveal at the end of Severance season one is like one of my all time faves right now. And I gasped so loud. I like couldn't catch my breath. I was like, what? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was.
I'll take that as a compliment.
And I am ready. I am like, I feel like they could go so many. I've tried to avoid like reading too much about season two, which there's not a ton anyway, but I'm like, they could go so many places. I just want to come into it like I came into the first season knowing really nothing, yeah, you know, like not knowing what was going to happen, kind of what the mystery was and just letting it all kind of like play out.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that question, what we're really great for is like Ben Stiller, in season one, that was like his baby. And Ted Lasso is Jason's baby.
Yeah.
The fact that we get to work with like these two gorillas of comedy and drama and directing. And, you know, I mean, I know Jason doesn't feel that way about himself, but I mean, he's so talented and multifaceted, you know, he can direct, he can act, he can write. And they're both like, I remember me and Deechin talking to each other, like they're both very specific and meticulous about their projects irrespectively. And you get a sense from that. And it kind of, and everyone else feeds off of that. And you kind of just have to go with the way they work. While it might be very different, but they're very specific people. And, you know, she would tell me stories about working with Ben. And then I would tell her stories about working with Jason. And I was like, oh my God, these, you know, there's some similarities to it about them, even though they're very different people. But that's what's probably more crazier than what on Apple shows is that we get to work with, you know, she worked with him and I got to work with Jason and Brendan and Brett. Like,
yeah,
it's just stupid lucky. Like, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I think this is true of a lot of Apple TV shows and streaming shows, is just like the handmade sort of nature of the stories that we're just getting to experience as viewers now. Like, it just,
and there's so many.
Yeah,
go ahead.
You're just seeing lots of different experiences reflected through the people who write them and who are working on the shows. And it's, mm-hmm. it's just like, yeah, everything feels like there's so much TV now that we can be more personal and kind of tell more specific stories. And that's, I think it's enriching. That's not a word. It's making the storytelling more rich.
Yeah. It gives you, you know, I think these streamers are allowing some of these creators to explore deeper, meaningful stories. You know, Ted Lasso's supposed to be a comedy, but it's running at 45, 50 minutes now. And is it a comedy? Sometimes it's not a comedy.
Yeah, after season two premiered, someone was like, I don't know when Ted Lasso went from a half-hour comedy to an hour-long drama, but I hope it wins both awards, or you know, something like that. You know?
Right.
It's like, yeah.
And I think that's nice. I think, you know, that's life, man. Sometimes life is funny, and then sometimes life is not funny. And yeah, I think... I get it why you want to tune into a multicam and just have a good time. Absolutely. But I think shows like this resonate because you have room to like Jamie is great. Like his acting is fantastic in that, you know, like first season you meet him, he's like, oh, this guy's kind of an asshole. And he has that moment in the locker room with his father, you know, and then like, holy shit, you know, that resonates with people. You ask like, what are your favorite scenes? Like, when Ted forgives Rebecca for that article, that's amazing. Biscuits, no barbecue sauce, throwing the dart. That scene, you know, that you can't put your thumb on that. It's like, that's a comedy scene. Mm. That's a thing. But you know, when they do choose to do comedy, it's funny. Like episode two, when they're all trying to figure like who's on first.
The locker room bit also is an amazing scene.
Oh, Mosley Lamour's delivery.
Why would Zappa write a book about Trent Crim? It's like a great line.
I died. Oh my God. That was the best moment of it's so good. It's yeah.
The project that you and Deechin worked together on, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., probably doesn't get enough credit for kind of how influential it's been. Like it was the first of the weekly Marvel shows that then kind of fed into and interacted with the Marvel movies, to now have wrapped that show and to see everything that all these Marvel shows have become. What's your kind of reflection on where Marvel's at and the opportunity that y'all had to be a part of that in the early stages of what we now know as the Marvel Universe today?
I'm grateful that show, I've done some conventions and stuff and met fans, and you know, you film a show and you're kind of in a bubble. You're on set with the cast and you go home and you come back and you're on set with the cast, and you can tend to kind of forget who you're filming it for and who's watching it and how they feel about it. And then meeting the fans and just seeing how much it's meant to them and how much affection they have for these characters. And like, even me, it surprised me. It means a lot. And you kind of, you know, I think that's the whole, like a lot of these Marvel shows are like, the world is fantastical. But I think part of the success with some of the shows and the movies is like, you know, people can still find a way to relate to them on a human level. And I think that's what adds to their success. So being a part of that early Marvel TV show was a blessing. It filmed in LA, so I got to go home and see my wife and kid. And I had just had my daughter when I started on that show. So that job like has a lot of special places in my heart, you know, like a job being on that show, getting to know those people and the creators and the writers did a fantastic job. So yeah, I'm grateful, and it's exciting to see how it's evolved to the movies and all the other shows. I mean, what do you guys, how do you guys feel? Are you guys tired of all the Marvel shows? Is it too much? You know, I always wonder, and would people still respond to the show today if it came out versus when it did?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of different because the seasons are longer and focuses on a bunch of different characters. But I know for me, like I have adolescent kids, and whereas not every Marvel movie is for them yet, like they're not ready for that yet.
Right.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, like those are great intros into the Marvel world until they are ready for all of the movies and the more serious shows. And so, you know, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Lost, which came before that, those to me, in my experience, were two of the first shows that was like, okay, we have to figure out how to record this because I don't want to miss it. Like, this is something that I don't want to miss every single week. Otherwise, I'll be out of the loop. And those were some of the first shows that, yeah, like you do check out the message boards and people are talking about what's going to happen. And it was a little bit different too, because the spoilery, like the internet, you could talk to a bunch of people, but the spoilery stuff wasn't leaking as much yet. And so it really was more community based. Whereas now, I know even for us in Ted Lasso, like we're kind of careful. We don't tread into Reddit that much anymore because you never know what you're going to find there. And we do want to experience the show, and we try to make sure that we don't spoil things. Yeah, like I have a sentimental attachment to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and look forward to now watching it with my kids. It'll be fun.
Well, Max, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been such a blast talking to you about your character and Ted Lasso. And we just so appreciate you, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. I hope I didn't rant too long. But I'm flattered you guys are fans of the show, and I'm a fan of the show too. And it's fantastic to talk about a part that people are excited about and entertained with. So thank you.
We absolutely are, and cannot wait to see where Zava goes this season. So thank you and take care.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
And that is our show. We had a great time chatting with Max about his work on Ted Lasso, as well as some of his other projects. You can find links to his social media and more in the show notes on our website, tedlassopod.com. We'll be back soon with more Ted Lasso goodness, but you can keep the conversation going with us on Twitter and Instagram in the meantime. Our handle on both platforms is @TedLassoPod. This episode of Richmond Till We Die is brought to you by Jen and Kerosene Productions. It was produced by Marissa, Christian, and me. If you're enjoying our show, please take 30 seconds to subscribe to our feed and give the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. Heck, if you're feeling generous, you could even do both. As always, we appreciate all the ways y'all share your love and support for the pod. Okay, I'm Brett, signing off for Marissa, Christian, and Max Osinski. Thanks for listening. Until next time, cheers, y'all.